Games Workshop sent us some of the awesome new Croup models.
That conversation has made me realise how much of a skill that is.
This is my
favourite. Absolutely wild.
I call that like a happy accident, so I just sort of went with it.
As you were explaining it, I was thinking, that can't be what it's going to be. If someone did an army of these, oh my God.
Right, are you all alive now? Can we get back to normal?
Yeah, if you want. Yeah. Literally, when's the last time we did all just three of us? Like
couple 4 weeks
ago? It's been a while.
It's been a while. Yeah.
Feels weird, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm back. I'm actually, if we want to get into it, I'm still not feeling great. But you know,
have a little pity party for Joe in the comments.
Yeah, I'm pushing through.
Someone was defending you the other day. Like, I'm just going to comment so Joe doesn't feel like he's.
I know. Depressed, yeah. You know. Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah, more of that.
more of that
would be good. Okay.
Well, what's been going on in the last week, hobby wise? Then, because we've had a long run of guests and irregular episodes for a while. So,
the return of Paul.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was rubbish.
The second coming.
No, I do want to just
address the Paul.
Address
in the room.
Something that it was my idea to get Paul on the podcast in the first place. I don't think I've addressed that on air, so that I do actually take credit for that.
But you're the one who's salty about Paul being on the episodes.
I think Joe. I think Joe didn't think that Paul would go down so well, and then he did.
I was like, "Yeah, get him on there. That made me look good."
You're like, yeah, we'll get Paul on. I won't be here. Everyone will be like, "Oh no, where's Joe?
I will say this is bleeding over into like other areas now as well. We had a work meeting.
Yeah,
with the team.
Yeah,
a Zoom meeting where it came up as a topic. Of the meeting with the team and everything. And I said that point that I just said, I was like, just to clarify, like, it was my idea to have Paul on the podcast, actually. And George called me a liar in front of everyone, which isn't true. Like, what I said was true. I wasn't lying. He instantly came in with, no, you can't just lie to everyone. And I was like, throw me under the bus in front of the whole team. Yeah. Yeah.
That is not the culture that we have in business.
The team meeting just devolved into a podcast, basically, for like 4 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
Just all of us just arguing.
We can't help ourselves. You give us a microphone and we just do this.
Job done.
You give me a platform, I must perform.
Dance, monkey, dance.
So, James.
Yes.
Another tank turned up. I noticed.
Riser pattern execution. I couldn't help myself.
He literally said, Joe, last week we had an intervention when you weren't here. I said, James, how many tanks? Like, this is getting ridiculous. And he doesn't actually know how many he has. It's getting that out of hand. And he said, but don't worry. I'm not buying anymore. The tank it's done now. And then 3 days later, what turns up?
I'm going to, I've had this exact conversation with him about paint before.
Yeah. I
so I know how this conversation goes.
Yeah.
I know how this conversation goes. He agrees to it in the moment and then a couple of weeks down the line, there's another one.
Out of production, four-dwell, riser pattern, executioner.
Doesn't even know.
He's got so many buzzwords, he can't keep on top of them.
I can't help it. I like.
Is this for the Mordians?
Most certainly is, yes.
It's quite handy, actually, because we're...
Oh, you've triggered something else as well. Guess what James said to me yesterday?
What?
He goes, George, I have a confession. I don't think that I'm going to get the Mordians done. In time for summer.
Oh, it was July. The 6 month.
Yeah. I'm in an RM. We'll see.
Yeah. Was it a 6 month?
It's bear in mind. Thing? Just
I think it was July. I think
June.
I don't remember why.
Because remember there was a whole
by the end of Jew Legion. Was it?
Yeah, that was it. Yeah.
Yeah. Something if I got till Jew Legion, that's even better. I get extra month because I said June initially, but if you're giving me July,
no then June then.
No.
Joe, I'll just get it wrong, and then you just take that as the new rules.
You heard it here on the podcast. They said July.
I was asking the question. Yeah,
so June was only for the infantry. So I just wanted
to say Jew Legion, to be honest.
Yeah.
But how many have you painted?
Tanks, 3.
No. How many infantry have you painted?
12.
Oh. That's more than I thought.
That's more than I thought, to be fair.
Yeah.
It's exactly 10% of the whole force of infantry. So. Mm.
Well, you got
where's your 7 now?
George is looking at that going, that's an army.
Yeah, I know.
12?
Yeah.
That's double mine there. Double
what's it? Are you playing an apocalypse game? Yeah.
Maybe if I Photoshop about 60 other 12s in, yeah. Then maybe, yeah. Yeah. No, yeah, I've got two commanders done now and I've painted my first squad. So, yeah.
Very nice.
Yes.
But the good news for me is for every tank he paints, he buys another one. So it's just getting, it's no, just, no, just yeah, kicking yeah, yeah. the can.
Was there actually, the was there like a wager or anything on
no,
this?
No, no,
just like no, bragging no, right.
He no. wishes there was, yeah, but there's yeah. not now. But yeah. currently I'm winning that race, so it's
it'd
fine.
Be such, you wouldn't even get good odds on that. Because if you was going to bet that James wouldn't finish something by a certain day, everyone's like, well, obviously.
But do you know what though? I think there is potentially a bit more at stake here than we're looking at. Because one of James's key points that we've battled previously is how... making these little deals and setting deadlines and stuff like that is the number one thing to motivate yourself, and you will get it done and mm-hmm. it will benefit you. So
unless you come into the office and say, by the way, I'm not getting it done in time. If, just he,
doesn't,
so you know.
If he doesn't get
well,
it done.
Well, I just thought.
Then it kind of unravels his whole, you know, his whole thought process.
Right. No so pressure. It's quite, it's no, actually no, quite, no pressure. No, I'll get it done.
It's
I'll
actually
it done.
Quite.
I'll get it done.
So
the
deal.
Thing is, I reckon I can batch the rest. I reckon I can do it. In quite a prompt time frame.
So. Can I make a prediction?
Mm.
What? When is the actual? It was the end of June.
End of June. Yeah.
It was the
end of June. Not June.
I reckon.
June.
I reckon as we come into June, it's going to look impossible. It's going to look like there is no way.
Mm. And we're the writing's
gonna,
on the wall.
We're laughing. The podcast. Begin the June is going to be brilliant because it's like, oh, can you believe it? Look, he's only painted 20 infantry, whatever. And then he'll have like two weekends on the spin where he gets 2 hours sleep. And then he gets to the end of June and he's going to have done it. I'm telling you, that's what's going to happen. That's what happens every time. He's going to have rebasing them. Ree's going to have family over and they're going to get roped into basing them and
the
stuff
dogs
like that.
Are going to be like putting the texture paint.
No, they'll be digging up the basing material in the garden.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. That's what's going to happen. That's my prediction.
I will just say for the record,
it
doesn't count if he starts cheating and enlisting others. To...
No outsourcing.
Yeah, no outsourcing.
No conscription. Okay. Yeah, no, I'll get it done. I'll
even
it done.
Without that, I genuinely think that's how it's going to go.
I'll get it done.
It's going to look like absolutely no chance. And then before you know it.
I just...
For the record, by the way, if I recall correctly, there was no bet on my side. James just said he was going to... James just threw himself like under the bus.
Potentially.
Yeah, but I need
there
to
was
see
no,
that.
There was
I
no
need...
talk of me getting, oh, well, George is going to get his arm. Like, I've got nothing. I haven't got nothing to do.
Yeah, but I need
I
to
just
do
said,
that.
I've always said that I'm a slow painter. I ain't getting there.
Yeah, well, should we add that in now then? Do you want to... When well, are you getting your Blood Angels number?
There's no chance.
I think here's what I want. In July, in the middle of Jalegion, I want... you two to play a game against each other.
There is zero
no chance
with your fully painted
zero
no
chance.
With
no
your
chance.
Fully painted army.
No chance of a game.
I don't even own an army.
My gaming days are over.
I've never played 40K. I don't even own an army. I've just got like a couple of boxes of Blood Angels.
Yeah, but you're building an army, aren't you?
Yeah, like over the course of the next like 10 years probably.
My gaming days are over. That's it. End of. Like, I don't really...
Love that you said that, like a washed-up skateboarder.
Yeah.
Like, oh, those days are behind me.
Yeah. No, I just don't... It doesn't... For me, it's not the thing I'm interested in anymore. Painting is.
All right, well, we'll just set it up as if it's a game. You don't actually have to play.
Yeah.
But that's what...
You can roll dice if you want.
That's what I'll just roll. I'll play... Yeah, let me play a game with both of your... I'll play against myself.
Yeah.
It could be like when you have like that chessboard and you like spin it around.
All right. Take the gaming thing out of it.
Mm.
In the middle of July, I think we should be able to take an army battle picture.
Mm. Right, I'm going to go on record.
So there needs to be a substantial enough amount to take a battle picture of your Blood Angels against your
audience. I'm going to...
That's what I would
say. Right, so I'm going to say this right
he's
now.
He's so worried
no
about it.
No chance.
I'm going to set myself a target and hit it. I'm going to paint them audience for the end of June, and I will do a showcase video about them, plus also some tanks in July.
Very nice. Well, actually, I'm sorry, I'm like vaguely remembering now. Wasn't it something like he was only going to get the tanks done?
No, infantry.
No, it was infantry.
Oh, it was get all the infantry done and then sort the
tanks. Yeah, fairness, he always specified he wouldn't have the tanks done.
Yeah, but I'm going to... Okay.
I thought it was the other way around.
But for Jalegion, the addition to the infantry will be some tanks, and then I'll do a showcase.
Well, Jalegion, yeah, that would work because it's heresy stuff, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And then August is humans. so you can get some more inventory done.
Yeah. All right, don't set the bar too high.
I've got other painting things
to sort out for this year anyway, so.
Yeah, that's the big kicker for this is he's decided he's going to take a load of competition entries on to push in the Mordian's back.
Do a Mordian competition entry, surely.
One of my tanks will be, yes.
Yeah, there you go.
Look at this, solving problems. It's good to have you back, Joe. Just solving all the problems that we've caused. The thought of using an airbrush to paint your miniatures can seem daunting. We see them used all the time in videos and tutorials on YouTube, but how do you start? There's an overwhelming amount of choices to make, like what compressor should you buy and which airbrush is right for your needs. These are questions we hear all the time from new painters, which is why we decided to partner with Everything Airbrush to create the ultimate bundle kits to get you started. These bundles were hand-picked, built upon equipment we and our artists here at Siege have been using for years, so we can stand by its quality, durability, and dependency. Whether you want an affordable entry point or a professional-grade setup, we have you covered with airbrushes and compressors that are perfectly paired to complement one another. The kits also include all the hoses, fittings, and accessories you need so you can get going straight out of the box. And best of all of the items included in the kit are from brands you can trust, like Harder & Steenbeck and Sparmax. Even if you're already an airbrush user, Everything Airbrush is still the best place to shop for all of your maintenance products, replacement parts, paints, and equipment. They have a huge inventory no matter what you need. With speedy delivery and excellent service, it's no wonder why they boast a 5-star rating on Trustpilot. To order your kit now, head to our affiliate link in this episode's description or go to everythingairbrush.com. Okay, we've got a couple of topics this week. First of all, it is March for McCrag, so we're going to be going through all of the wonderful entries that we've had for the community at the end of this episode. But first off, Games Workshop sent us some of the awesome new Croot models. So we've had a couple of little challenges going around. We tasked the team with painting some of them in a bunch of different colour schemes. Adam, our in-office painter, painted the fantastic one for the release day. And we all chimed in a little bit as well. Joe, myself.
Yeah. I'm sure you've got some like witty little quip to say about how I didn't quite finish my model or whatever. So I'll let you get that out of the way. Go.
Okay. Well, it's quite on brand. You painted half a model and James didn't paint one at all. So I'd say.
Would actually say, so we start. You want to start with mine?
Yeah, we'll start with yours.
It's not the most enticing one to start with. Right. Although I would say actually, other than not finishing the model, I did stick to the brief a little bit more than someone, as we were supposed to paint non-box art, come up with our own colours and everything, and we ended up with a few pale green ones. So not the variety we were looking for, but...
Should we rewind a little bit? Let's talk about sort of the models as a whole before we get into the painting too much.
Yeah.
I've never had particular like affinity for Croot before, but I saw these new models. I thought they looked really cool. The originals are sort of before my time in the hobby, so this is kind of all new for me, I suppose.
that literally could mean they were originally released in like 2016. Exactly. You'd be like, it's before my time.
Yeah,
these old people models.
Yeah, these boomer models. But no, the thing that surprised me most actually was these models are massive. We've done some size comparisons with the studio ones, which I'll put on screen for people. But yeah, they're absolutely enormous, which is awesome.
They've been that downtime has been spent in the gym, by the looks of it.
Yeah,
so, yeah. No, they're great. Yeah, they are huge compared to various models that are quite sort of like synonymous within many ranges in 40K. Like they're massive.
I have always had a bit of a liking for Croot, and actually, I think I mentioned before on one of the episodes, I might have mentioned I painted some Blackstone Fortress stuff and you get a Croot character in there.
Was that their like first reintroduction?
The first like, here's a new Croot model. Here's what a new Croot model might look like. And that was the first one that I painted out of Blackstone Fortress because I just loved it. I thought it was really cool. And for a while in my like little kind of group, it was actually a running joke at one point that... So when I used to play Kill Team a lot, when Kill Team was first reintroduced and I had a Kill Team podcast, it was a running joke that I was going to make a Croot Kill Team because at the time that was like ridiculous. The models were old. Mm. And because I'd liked painting that model, it was like, oh, I might do a Croot Kill Team. And the rules weren't great for them or whatever. Fast forward, like, and they actually released a Croot Kill Team box, didn't they? Like not too long ago. Mm-hmm. So that was quite funny. And that was then the real like reintroduction of what new Croot models might look like, I think. But yeah, the first one was the Blackstone Fortress thing. So I've always had this like sort of affinity for Krute, and I really like them as models, and I like them as the design of them and stuff. But because the models were all quite old, it always put me off committing anything to them. So I was buzzing for this this release.
Do you want to talk about your painting process then? How you tackled yours?
Yeah. So one thing I will say is I really enjoyed painting it. As you pointed out, it's, I think you assessed about 75% finished, which I'd probably agree with. But the I really enjoyed painting it, and I think it feels similar to painting the Crawl Boys stuff. It's very similar.
I can see that.
It's a very similar feel. And I enjoy painting those and enjoy painting orcs quite a lot. So it's a very similar thing where it's like mostly that sort of flesh that's on show. Although with these and the Crawl Boys, it's like the flesh gets a bit like, because they're like skinny, there's like more bone poking out. So it gets a bit sharp.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Like, I know what you mean.
Whereas with like big 40k orcs, a lot of that's just like muscle or whatever. So it's all round.
They're not super muscly in like the volumes of the limbs, but you can see there's kind of like sharp angular sort of like knee joints.
Yeah, which I actually quite like because it gives you the opportunity to do some more solid edge highlights that you might not do on a 40k orc or like an ogre type thing or something like that where it's just flesh. So one of the things I really wanted to try actually was, I've never really used a color primer and just gone with that. We talk a lot about, like, obviously army painter do color primers, GW, Color Forge we mention all the time, but I only ever really used a black primer. And I have, when Color Forge first came out, I kind of bought a few different ones, but didn't really use them.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a red Color Forge primer, which is supposed to match Mephiston red. So I was like, this would be a cool opportunity. We want to do some wacky color schemes, show people some different color schemes you can do. So I was like, I'll do I almost was treating it like I was painting a blood letter or something like that.
Very similar.
That kind of red. Like,
yeah. It instantly like screamed blood letter aesthetic to me.
Yeah. That was kind of the vibe. So what I actually did was I literally just used the red spray from Color Forge, which is, I think it's called like Sanguine Red or something.
Mm-hmm.
Just over the plastic. I used it as a primer. I didn't prime black first. I told this to James and he all the hairs went up on the back of his neck. but I just wanted to, it was a test really. It was like we've had conversations before about, are these really a primer? What is an actual primer? Like, will it work? Like, all that.
We've had a few little chemistry discussions on past episodes about whether spray paints and spray primers and where they cross over and if it's technically a primer. But
yeah,
I think the sort of conclusion of that, just for if anyone hasn't caught that episode, I think our sort of general conclusion was it's probably fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Most of the time it's going to be fine. There's certain technical elements that the manufacturers have to use if they want to call it a primer, though.
Yeah. But not to rehash that conversation too much, but we've all said that some actual primers, particularly with the airbrush, tend to not be very strong,
mm-hmm.
compared to a spray can that isn't advertised as a primer as such, tends to be really strong. So it's not necessarily that because you say one or the other.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just saying, like, the upshot was that just cause originally I think we were all like, oh, if it's called, make sure it's called a primer.
Mm-hmm.
But then what we came to the conclusion was, well, there is certain boxes you can tick to be called a primer. It doesn't necessarily mean the one that isn't called a primer isn't as useful.
Yeah.
But anyway, I believe probably shouldn't go off the top of my head, but I believe the Color Forge ones do actually state primer as well. But I went straight over the plastic with the red. And one of the things I really wanted to test was just how much of a color match to Mephiston red it is, because even within brands, sometimes I have this issue where like the actual paint doesn't match the spray. So the aim was actually to spray red and then go over with Mephiston to like either with the airbrush or just with a brush or whatever, just so that in case I make any mistakes, I can tidy up again. And I did one leg with Mephiston and I was literally like, it looks exactly the same. Like there is, I could not tell difference other than the actual like
finish
where the colourful stuff is obviously really matte. Other than the finish, the actual colour was the same. And I was like, as soon as I put a varnish over this, it's going to be, same. It's going to look the same. Like,
yeah.
And because even within the finish, it wasn't actually that different. So I was like really impressed by that, to the point of I just didn't bother doing the Mephiston all over the rest of the model. I just went on to shading and stuff like that.
That's good for a efficiency standpoint. You could definitely extrapolate that to doing an army.
Like, exactly.
A ton of time.
I was actually also, not that this is my plan and I'm not going to rope myself into any like 6 month army challenges and things like that, but I was approaching it with a thing of like, okay, if I had to paint 30 of these, you know, what would I want to do kind of thing.
Yeah.
We just had conversations with Peachy about that sort of thing and Liam on previous episodes. So that was kind of fresh in my mind as well.
It's kind of fun when you like accidentally learn stuff like that, because this was effectively like treated as its own independent project. It's good that you're still learning things from it that would be useful elsewhere. And it wasn't like this one exercise in a vacuum of I painted this group model and then that was the end of it.
Yeah.
You still got something out of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely made me more comfortable with using a coloured spray can primer as a base coat.
I'm surprised you haven't done that before.
Yeah, I would have thought
just never really like, I think I had a couple of successful experiences with that back in the day, and I had a couple of negative experiences with that.
So what would you have done previously? You would have sprayed the whole thing black and then with a brush just painted on the Mephiston red?
Probably airbrush.
Okay. Yeah,
probably airbrush. I mean I only even tried this because I had the can there.
Sure.
I always kind of resented the idea of like, I could just airbrush over the black, so why am I going and buying a
waste of money, yeah,
red can, yeah, to airbrush over the red can? Do you know what I mean?
So, but now from my experience, you'll know that would save you a ton of time.
Exactly, yeah. If I was doing an army and I could... So part of the reason, going way back, part of the reason I failed with that Necron army project is because I sprayed... I primed everything black and I wanted black armor, but I still like airbrushed black over everything so that it was the same black. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's like a minor OCD type thing or whatever, but and I think had I not done that whole slog of effectively spraying an entire army twice the same color, I might have not been as beaten down to like, I don't want to look at this thing again.
Yeah. It's so funny, maybe we'll have to talk about it on a future episode, but airbrushes are seen as this like speed tool that they really aren't in a lot of cases.
Yeah. We can get onto that. But so anyway, yeah. So it's really cool that it's opened that door for me, really, which is going to be really handy with, you know, I talk a lot about Underworld warbands that I want to paint and stuff like that. But yeah, actually, in terms of the models and everything, really, really enjoyed the process of painting them. Like, I do wish I could spend a little bit longer on it and maybe approached it with that mindset from the start. Like, it's one of those, I can definitely see myself picking up a character or two. Like, definitely enjoyed them.
Yeah, the details on them are fantastic as well, right? The refinement of the sculpt is mega. Even on the bog standard crew infantry in the box, they're phenomenal. Like, they're really, really, really good. And the characters are just, like, the one I had painted and the one I half painted is mega.
Yeah.
So, do you want to dive into your process? So it's on screen for the listeners. Do you want to dive into your process a little bit more for how far you've got the rest of the model? So with the skin?
To be honest, yeah, the skin was the only thing that's had any real time put on it. I did that with a base coat. So it's pretty much all just the spray directly, the
sanguine red.
Yep. And then I just mixed some... I think I should have brought my like little note list thing, but I'm pretty sure. Yeah, I don't have my journal. So I mix like corn red into some black just to make it even more darker.
Mm-hmm.
I have this issue all the time, and we've spoken about it previously, where like with how much contrast to put on, because I would like think, oh yeah, I need to make the recesses quite dark or something like that. And especially on natural things like that, I'll always then be like, oh, I've gone too dark, I'll go back. And then I'll go back and with the base coat and glaze that, or I'll put some shades over that again. I'll just find myself constantly going backwards and forwards on like, oh, I've done it too dark. Oh, I need to brighten it up. Oh, now I need to darken it down again kind of thing. So I did that a bit. So the shading is somewhere between some kind of like corn red, black, Mephiston red mix. And then I just kind of did like a bit of a like soft glaze type highlight on some of the volumes. I didn't want to get fully like volumetric highlighting completely.
Just to rewind you a little bit, with that shade, was that done like as a wash that you made, or was that?
Like, yeah. That was like mostly as a wash. There's only on these models, there's only like some like really, there's only a couple of actual like deep crevices, if you like on the
if
hands.
If any,
and,
really.
Hands yeah. on
they're
the feet.
Not, they're not that. That, like they've got a lot of detail on them, but they're not like there's not like loads of sculpted deep areas on them. Like
yeah, the hands and the feet have some deeper recesses, and the arm joints do leave a gap, which I kind of attempted to smooth over the top and leave the bottom half as almost like a bit of a recess in itself. On that note, actually, they go together really well, but the gap or seam line type thing on the shoulders and everything was quite annoying, because that actually stopped me being able to do a TSA, temporary sub assembly, which I wanted to do. I wanted to be able, because I didn't want the gun blocking everything.
Sure.
So I was going to do that, but if I wanted to smooth over those gaps, I couldn't really do that. Otherwise, I'd be painting it and then having to put it on and smooth the gaps over, kind of thing.
There's like, this infantry box as a whole is quite interesting, because it's not, they're all very different poses. As you, like with Marines, for example, they're all pretty much a bog standard. Like there'll be some variation, but these are all in like, they're all charging in different directions, holding the weapons in different ways. I think so it makes them quite unique to each other, which is really nice.
The unit looks very organic, like to match obviously the actual models. It's not like obviously they're heavily armored troops. The silhouettes individually are quite different as well, which is quite nice. So I can imagine if you have multiple versions of the box, your force isn't going to look so cookie cutter by that way of doing it, because each unit will have a lot of variation of pose, which is quite good.
Just to recap to the red, kind of highlighted back up a little bit volumetrically by mixing some Evil Suns Scarlet, is it?
Yep.
Into Mephiston Red on some of the raised areas, the muscles and things like that. And then catching some of the sharper edges on the face. And then final or only real actual edge highlight that I did was like mixing...
Wild Rider?
No, I went a step above on the actual orange.
Oh.
Troll Slayer.
Yep.
Put some Troll Slayer into Evil Suns and started doing that. It was still really soft, to be honest, but probably would have... Yeah, I mean, eventually you'd want to take it a little bit further maybe, but... quite nice. It's a fairly standard red recipe, isn't it? It was quite fun to paint.
What's your plan for the beak, might I ask?
So I went a bit back and forward on the beak. So the beak at the minute looks like a darker red.
Mm-hmm. Because I wasn't sure if that was just from where it's at in the painting process, or if that was
the colour you chose.
The colour you chose.
I'd kind of... So I haven't really properly highlighted it or anything, because I kind of left it as it was. Originally, I did like a black beak. And then it looked weird, so I just painted like a darker red over it. But yeah, it was kind of undecided, really. I think on a lot of them, you see the beak is just the same color as the skin, but I think that's because the skin tends to be this like neutral color, so then the beak looks okay in that color. When you're doing like this red or brighter colors and things, might not look as good. So yeah, not really too sure on that. And then just went standard metallics on like the armor. Standard metallic on the gun. All the metallics on there are literally just base coated, washed, and then random little sketchy little highlights just dabbed on, picked out. The wood for the gun just hasn't been touched. The wood for the gun's been like base coated in some Vallejo
brown.
Is that Vallejo? Is it flat
it's
brown? Vallejo.
Is it going to be like one of those brown colors where it's like some weird specific version of brown that's different to the other weird specific version of brown? Oh, no, it's not dark brown, it's brown dark.
Like. I'm afraid I don't have the serial number off the top of my head. Yeah. I'm pretty
don't
sure
have the 9-digit code.
I'm pretty sure it's just called flat brown or something.
Five, actually. Yes.
Yeah, I think it's called flat brown, maybe. That could be wrong. so the things that I was mostly undecided on and still are as yet is like the kind of beads, like the hair type thing, like...
It's got little braids in it.
But like the hair, like growth thing.
Yeah, but they've also got like the same sort of little like.
They have it all
bits.
Over the. Yeah, they're like spikes, aren't they? They're just like,
semi porcupine esque.
Yeah. So it was kind of undecided where to go with that, really. I'm not sure what
I quite like this scheme as a whole. Being honest, like where even where it's at, I would say that this is like pretty much gaming ready, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'd be more than happy to game with it if I was doing an army, like I say. But yeah, I was quite happy to do.
That's quite the nice thing with doing like an effective color like that, is it's like kind of enough to carry the rest of the model.
Yeah, if it's a bright, yeah, I mean, anyone that's going to be looking at a unit, a tenor, then they're just going to be looking at that it's bright red crew, aren't they? They're not going to be looking at the finer details as much, probably. The eyes as well, I just did like a little dab of, I think I did actually base coat them like green and everything, but then by the time, because of the way the eyes are sculpted, by the time you put a final dot to make them look like they're kind of glowing a little bit or something, you don't really see any of that. But
nice.
Yeah,
really
fun model though, fun little challenge. And I do think they're really cool models in the box. What about you? How did you get on with yours?
So I've spoken on a few previous episodes about this idea. It's funny because we're coming off the back of me talking about doing Blood Angels and spending like 100 hours a model, but I've been trying to get more okay with like not going crazy on everything.
It's kind of like a similar thing, like I was saying, what were you talking about with Peachy and exactly stuff like that. Yeah,
and that was in part from that conversation that we had with Peachy. So
I think that conversation has made me realize how much of a skill that is.
Yeah.
Or to dial back and to not actually...
To be okay with it, mentally.
Knowingly dial back. Because I genuinely think that's a reason why my painting hasn't progressed as much as it has, or why I'm not painting as much as I maybe were at one point, was because it was this like reverse, I don't know, like thing of... I spoke about like the lazy perfectionism thing before, where it's like, because I couldn't paint it to look like the box, it was a waste of time trying to paint it at all because I want it to look like the box.
Yeah.
So getting around that and having this thing of like, I'm actually okay with this model being, my aim with this model is for it to be less than that quality.
The ceiling isn't so high.
And the biggest thing that I took from that, what Peachy said, was like, he's not painting to the quality on the box. He's painting to this thing of having an army done,
yeah,
and that's it.
Yeah,
and that yeah, that was a really cool thing that I took from it as well. Yeah,
yeah. So in the spirit of that, I thought this model is a great opportunity to do a sort of, I don't want to call it a speed paint, but like a much more restricted, like limited time spent on the model as a whole. And the reason I think these models lend themselves really nicely to that is because there's a lot of like softer details. So because they haven't got loads of stuff on them, so there are some models that are very fleshy, but they're still wearing like armor plates and whatnot. Whereas with these creep models, like if you look at them, they're pretty much just skin with like a little strip of fabric here and there.
Do you know what I like as well? Just to cut in on that point. A lot of the extras, because there's not as much uniformity with them as there is with Marines, like you were saying, even with the poses. I've spoken before about how I don't like putting all pouches and stuff on Marines because it's like extra work and stuff like that. With these, like, there's not even like having a shoulder pad is like sporadic.
Yeah.
Like you could probably just leave the shoulder pad off if you want. It's a bit That's a whole more... bit of armor not to paint. You can leave the pouches off if you want.
It's quite good because then if you're like, oh, it's loads of organic and I do want a little bit of something different, you can stick maybe the pad on one or two and then you can make more of a feature of that on the model.
It feels like more intentional rather than you could choose to not put it on if you couldn't be bothered to paint it. It's like this is the option.
Now it's like, options. Yeah, they might just look like that.
Yeah,
like exactly. So if you really wanted to cut some corners, yeah, just leave the shoulder pads off, leave some of the things off, and then you've got mostly just the skin tone.
So I chose to leave the shoulder pad on, but like you said, I didn't put any of the extra like pouches on or anything like that. So when you break it down and look at the model in that sense, basically when you approach it from painting, and I think this would be like fantastic for doing armies because it would just be so easy to just go in head first. You haven't got a lot of things slowing you down, like especially at the base coating process. It's not like you've got to block in like a major secondary color. Like once you've done the skin, you've got like the beak and like a little sash of fabric and like a little bracelet or something and the hair, but it's not, they're like small details. They're not significant portions of the model. So yeah, in the spirit of this sort of like speed painting, but still like painting it nice. I wasn't like in a rush. I didn't set like a time limit. I just knew that, yeah, I'm going to do this in a couple of evenings and I'm not going to paint like full beans and try and limit myself somewhat. So this was my attempt at that. I'll put it on screen for the listeners.
Went with green.
You have a go at me. Yeah, I will just point out.
You have a go at me.
I will just point out that one of the part of the brief with this whole challenge was everyone paint like a different color. I had a little chart that I made of like colors that people were
you,
doing.
You tried to organize it so that everybody was painting.
Yeah, I mean, I picked red. Yep. Adam and James were doing blue, and we'll get to why they were doing the same once we talk about Adam's one. We've ended up with a couple of green ones that we're going to go over. I don't know how that happened.
So but, this is your equivalent to my Genesis chapter. This is your Genesis chapter.
Not to mention, like, not only did multiple of them end up being green, but like, it's not even like we've got multiple purple ones or something. Where it would have at least been part of the brief of like, don't paint it like the box art. But pale green is one of the colours that they are on the box art.
So didn't read. This brief is going to sound like total BS.
What do you say?
By the way, he's caveating it straight away.
I'll be the judge of that.
Yeah.
So I knew I wanted to do. I was originally going to do like a very very pale green, and I mean like a very very pale, not like the box art. And in fairness, mine isn't super close to the box art in terms of the colour cue, but it is close. I'll acknowledge that.
Yeah.
So this wasn't entirely intentional, and I genuinely hadn't looked at, like, I didn't look at these since they came out, and Adam gave the model to me like in a little Ziploc, so I didn't even see the instructions or the box or anything.
No, neither did I.
And I hadn't seen like what the actual GW ones looked like in ages, and I base coated the model in like a very, very light green like I wanted it. And by the time I started highlighting it and I put my shading on, which I'll speak about the process in a minute, it ended up looking quite dark green, and there was a middle point in the process where I was like, wasn't this meant to be like...
You had
the perfect opportunity to then add like some kind of markings or some kind of like patterning.
Well, if I had more time, I probably would have done that, James. But yeah, like I said, I wanted to do this sort
but
of like...
Couldn't be bothered.
Couldn't be bothered. That's just went box art colours, job done. Didn't read the memo.
Yeah, it was just, yeah, well, still.
I don't know what to say.
I don't really get... Normally you're like the golden boy, like, I've had mine ready for 6 weeks and here it is, and it looks like...
Actually, in
it
fairness,
looks like the box art on, and it's spot on quality. And
mine's the
like,
only one that's painted. You haven't finished yours. James didn't do one at all.
This is what I mean. Like, you're...
Excuse me, I got colour on mine. I concentrated more on the base than anything, but yeah, like, okay.
Who are you to judge whether mine's finished?
Yeah.
Who are you to judge another man's art?
Let's not bring up the front of a... chaos model, shall we?
All I'm saying is, yeah, I just wanted to bring it up because normally, and I imagine as you will be next month with painting challenges and things like that, you're like, oh, here it is, it's done, and like, me and James haven't even started yet. So if I see any dent in the armor, I will zone in on it.
Okay, well, I'll speak about the few...
However, it does look very nice.
It does look good, yeah. It does look good.
I'll speak about the few shortcuts that I took in that sort of speed painting process.
Following the brief being one of them.
Choosing green.
Yeah. So first of all, I base coated all the model in this sort of pale green. Should have gone paler. Fair enough.
Different colour? Paler green? Different colour?
But one of the things I really wanted to try with this was using contrast paints in more of their... I don't want to say in the traditional sense because I didn't do it over like a white or like a warm off-white where you just slap the full pigment on. But I knew that this model would lend itself to, I guess, using contrast paints as more of a heavily pigmented wash.
Yeah.
And I knew I wanted to try that. And I knew this model would be perfect for that because it's that kind of like soft detail. There's not really any flat areas. So you know that it's all going to flow into the recesses nicely. And if you dilute it with the contrast medium, it's not going to be this like super harsh, stark thing. Now, I could try and play this off as like some sort of color theory genius, but I accidentally didn't do what I was meant to do and it worked out for the better. So I done it all green. And I was going to use a purple wash because Paul was talking about going mental with colour on last week's episode. And I thought, you know what? That'll be fun because it's kind of complementary colours. I thought I'll have some interest in the shadows rather than just doing like a brown.
Hang on a second. Hang on. So you had a second opportunity to add a different colour to the miniature. Yeah. And you went, nah, it's okay.
The prompt to go mental with colour has still led you to a pale green box.
So let me go into that. So... I put on a purple.
What, by the way, do you know what specific contrast you were using?
It was Magos purple, I think is how you say it.
What about the green?
So there wasn't a green. So the green was like a green base coat. No. So that's what I'm saying. So I'd done the green base coat and I wanted to use the contrast as like a pigmented wash sort of thing. Thinking that, I'll put the purple on and it'll be like this nice rich purple in the shadows and it'll look quite visually interesting. And I think I was thinking if it is too purple, I can kind of play it off as like markings or that's just how they look because they're like, you know, sci-fi creatures. Well, that'd be cool. But I put it on. and the because I thinned it down, and I guess the hues just like cancelled each other out perfectly. Mm. So I ended up with this like dark green but slightly purple brown wash, which looked like I'd done it on purpose. So yeah. I didn't really do what I was aiming for. It ended up looking pretty good, I think.
Yeah.
But it was kind of a shot in the dark, and it, I guess, paid off. It wasn't quite what I was going for. I was thinking there'd be a bit more purple, and it ended up a lot sort of more brown, just because it's, like I said, the colors were just sort of seemingly canceling each other out kind of perfectly. So I think if I'd used a different contrast paint or even a different green, it might have had more of the effect of I was expecting, but I call that like a happy accident. So I just sort of went with it.
Sometimes they're the best sort of discoveries that you make is I always say it's like the experimenting, like it's just trying something and you find out something that works amazingly. As I said, it looks great. The model looks mental.
Yeah. The green I used was Death World Forest, I think. And then it was highlighted with Strachan Green, I think is what it is.
Yeah.
They're quite desaturated greens, to be fair.
Yeah.
I think it's cool that we've both kind of had this like little minor experimental test with it and both kind of gone, oh, that was good.
Yeah.
That was cool.
Exactly.
Should try that. Yeah. Everyone should try those. Yeah.
If you're a long-term listener of the podcast, you'll know how important it is to have the right tools to aid you in your painting. And if there's one piece of equipment that I could never live without, it's my Onyx lamp from Native Lighting. It doesn't matter what brush or paints you have if you can't see what you're doing in the first place. The Onyx is the perfect lamp for miniature painting because its super bright 2200 lumen LEDs cast soft and diffused light on your models without any harsh shadows. And its daylight balanced color temperature of 6500K gives you the confidence that the colors you are painting are accurate. As someone with a very small hobby desk, by far my favorite feature though is its articulating arm, which clamps to the side of your desk, maximizing your workspace. It's also super adjustable, so you can sit comfortably in the perfect painting position without sacrifice. It also folds up into a compact shape, which is great if you like to travel to paint with your friends. To upgrade your setup and order yours now, head to siegestudios.co.uk/shop or head to the link in this episode's description. There was a few other sort of shortcuts, I guess I'll say, that I took. The main one being, for all of the metallics, I wanted to do it as this sort of like, weathering can be both quick and slow, kind of depending on how you approach it. It's often used as a sort of speed shortcut because it doesn't have to look perfect, because that's kind of the point, right? So what I wanted to do was have this kind of secondary color of black, but try and incorporate the metallics in there. So I've done this like metallic chipping highlight on all of the black areas to make it look like, I guess, the black paint has been like chipped off and that's the sort of metal underneath. But the biggest benefit of that is because I was using Vallejo's 950 black, which covers so well out the bottle. So it's basically just a one coat of black. And then I went in with some of my scale color metallics and I took my normal like brush that I would use for edge highlighting with. And before I put it on, I just dried it out on some kitchen paper towel. So it was not like I was dry brushing, but like, I guess just wicked out just a little bit of that moisture, just sort of touched the tip to it to just pull out any moisture that was in it. And then when you start edge highlighting it, you get this sort of broken effect where it's like, I'd say you get like 85-90% coverage, but it's not so much about the fact of it covers the edge perfectly, because you still get it like the whole way down. But within that, it kind of has these like jagged edges. It's not like perfectly smooth. So that worked out quite nicely. I was quite pleased with that. And then when it came to the browns, just going really quick, like just with a brown and a wash, quick highlight, pretty quick and dirty. But I think that it would be very easily evolved into an army scheme. I think overall on the model, I must have spent probably 3.5-4 hours. And that was kind of because I went into it without a plan. And that was sort of the point. If I'd sat and planned this out, I probably could have done it in less time. And now I've done this, I suppose I could do another one in less time. And if you was batch painting this, it would work really well for that, because whether you're using the contrast paints or if you're using a wash or whatever, like batching this, like the model would be dry by the time you got back around. With this, I was kind of having to like jump to other details, because you can use like a hairdryer to speed up drying, but I often find that that gives me shiny areas or some pooling, or you kind of like end up baking it while it's drying and it doesn't quite go how you want. But if you was doing a batch, obviously you could just jump onto the next model by the time you got back around. But what I was doing was trying to find like other stuff to do on the model. So while I was painting, it was a bit more sporadic of like, okay, well, I'll paint the beak and then I'll paint. There was kind of no order to it, but that was just sort of as a trying not to waste any time. Whereas it could have been like more efficient and more streamlined with it. Like, okay, now I'm going to do all the black and then all the black color and then all the skin. But yeah, so that was my process for that, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. Obviously, we had some of the other team paints up as well. So
should we go into the first one? Because James, you was going to paint the same color scheme as Adam.
Correct.
So yeah. I'll put Adam's one on screen that we painted for the NDA date now.
Yeah. So Adam finished the character. Basically, what we're trying to do is Adam and James came up with this color scheme, which kind of, I'll let James talk about in a second, but it kind of nods back to an old codex scheme for Crute. But we were obviously taking some of the infantry models out of the box for this little challenge, but we wanted to have a unique and consistent color scheme to do the rest of the box in between Adam and James. So that's why James's was going to be the same as Adam's.
Cool. Do you want to talk about the scheme for that?
Yeah. So when me and Ad talked about this, we were like, right, we really want to do something a little bit nods, because obviously the release of a Crute box is quite a big thing, considering that they came out in dribs and drabs. There was a couple of Forge World bits back in the day. There was obviously a couple of the main kit obviously for the infantry, but they haven't had their own proper big release or their own main release. And obviously this is quite a big thing for them. And everyone who wanted a Crute army can now do that, which is great. So when me and Ad spoke about what should we do as like a main kind of color scheme for the rest of the bits in the box, we went straight to the OG very first Tau Codex when the faction was released, and it has some really good old color schemes of like Crute in there. So we looked through and wanted something a little bit different. Obviously, didn't want green, didn't want red because you were doing it, didn't want any of those colors. And there's a really good old.
It's good. They looked through the brief and they went, "Oh, so and so's doing that color. I won't do that." And then they were like, "Oh, I don't want to do it like the box arcs. It's quite good, isn't it?"
Yeah, imagine that.
I learned from the Genesis chapter episode.
Yeah, James has spent his one of those, like, getting around the rules.
So you're not allowed anymore.
Yeah. I spent my one token pretty early in March. I've got to be a good boy for the rest of the year. Yeah.
Exactly. Haven't spent mine yet. So, yeah. No. And there was a really cool blue scheme, painting the old Regal blue, quite dark. And obviously with this, we wanted to do something a bit different. So me and I just threw some ideas backwards and forwards and decided to go for blue for skin, with quite a lot of high contrast, big tonal variance on the skin, and then stick to kind of like a bit of a primary color triad. So like do like yellow quills, which I thought would be really cool. Like we were looking at like blue parrots and things like that, looking at how they kind of like have the plumage and stuff like that to see how the colors are done and all those kind of things. And obviously because the blue it's quite a cool color, like we wanted the leather to be quite warm as well, so we went for quite a warm rich reddish kind of brown, bought the leather on the model. Obviously the metal sections having a bit of a brownish tinge to them as well, so they've got a little bit of you wouldn't expect Crute to have like brand new pristine equipment, so all the metals and stuff like that were quite worn, quite aged looking, you know, as if they'd had them for a long time. And then yeah, really wanted something a little bit different for the basing as well, so we, because they're bright blue, we thought, well, putting like a more like a gray or a brown base and corresponding base rim on them potentially might have not been the best play, considering that it had a lot of brown leather on them already. So we ran some ideas back and forwards about sort of like alien world schemes and came up with this really cool kind of like, it's almost like a greenish, like emeraldy marble kind of world, kind of like that scheme.
The way Adam painted the rock on that base is just so cool.
Yeah.
It's sort of like glowing mineral kind of
thing. He's done stuff like that before on some of the other models. And I know
I remember distinctly he'd done it on the Underworlds.
I'm so glad you're about to say this. That's exactly what I was about to say, was there was a Underworlds warband.
I said Kill Team. I meant for Underworld.
And he did like a custom color scheme on them. And it's so cool, but they include on, there's a rock that's quite prominent on one of the models.
It's obviously levitating kind of thing, isn't it?
Yeah. And the way he painted that rock is very similar.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
The green scheme was just something a bit different. And like, yes, you could have gone more like a Mars-esque, because then it would have worked with the rest of the colors on there, a bit of a reddish kind of hue. But we just thought like the dark green emerald kind of like, we wanted an alien looking world basically. Cause I think it kind of in keeping with the models, and wanted something that did contrast the model, maybe didn't directly nod to any of the main colors that are on the miniature in some kind of color relationship, but just something completely out there that was a bit different.
It's nice as well, because it's not like super distracting.
No, it's not.
It's not exactly, this like big glowing focal point.
No.
And your eye is still drawn to the vibrant blue of the skin. Yeah. But then when you look at it for a little bit longer, you see like, oh, okay, that's what we did there.
Yeah, so we went for kind of like a majority kind of like 60-65% kind of blue, bit, obviously a lesser percentage yellow, and then a tiny percentage in the triadic relationship of the colors. Like, so the red is only noted on some of the spines and things like that. If you look at the cape that he's wearing, there's a couple of little bits of red splashes there, which was quite nice. The weapons as well, kept them really utilitarian. So like just literally basic metallics, woods, added some like subtle rust effects onto some of the metallics as well.
Just some like ivory on there as well.
Yeah.
The hilts.
Added on some neutral tones just for like the wraps and things like that, just so it's something that works with the rest of the palette, but doesn't take away from the main color relationship. So he done that on that shaper. Yes, I didn't paint a model for this one, unfortunately. I really wanted to. I fell in love with the flesh shaper when I saw it, like super aggressive, like attacking kind of pose, like lots of intent in the actual, in the pose. I thought the head scarf thing was quite a cool thing as well. I basically started doing the exact same scheme, following obviously all the colours that me and Ada decided upon for it. But I just, being frank, I kind of got captivated by the base, I'm not going to lie. Like, I went on this, I don't know what's going on at the minute. I've gone through some crazy basing things. Like on the Korn one, I put a load of time into the base. On this one, I made a base. I wanted to tell a bit of a story, like with the model and stuff. And you'll see it. We'll put something up for March McCraig later, but the base that I've done. But I just got taken away by the base, essentially.
Yeah, I was going to work the March of McCraig thing into the base for the crew. It is a shame that like more of these reveals haven't lined up to like our thing. Like, just I would like just like a couple of them to line up by accident.
I suppose, you know, we could have done, because the spirit of the challenge is that you can just do a little part. So we could have done like a helmet or something.
This is what I was going to say. I was going to put a helmet like on the base or something, but I was like, that's just too obvious. I've just stuck a helmet on the base.
Yeah. If it's done like without intention and you kind of just do it for the sake of it.
Retrospectively, I did think, literally yesterday I was thinking, oh, it would have been quite cool to maybe put a helmet like on one of the blades on the gun. Because the crew have those guns where they've got the two blades coming off of them. And I was like, oh, it would have been cool to actually have like a helmet like stuck onto one of them.
Yeah.
Next year.
I will be finishing the model though. Like
I was going to say, are you going to finish it?
I haven't stopped painting it. Like it's just literally like with all the stuff going on, like, you know, I just haven't had a chance to put as many hours as I wanted into it. And also I wanted to have a comparable model with Adams as well. So we both had obviously exactly the same scheme, the two characters obviously, but just time slipped away for me and I invested way too much time on making and painting the base, unfortunately. But the model's got like all the colors on in the right places and stuff. I just haven't done any of the sort of like contrast or sort of like shading and highlights and details and stuff. So I'll get it done.
I love the color scheme.
Yes. We were going to do old school codex, but a bit brighter. Make it more primary color. Try it. Add some yellow on there, because the yellow on the, I'm sure the Regal Blue scheme's got yellow on it, but it's the yellow is the brightest point, and we wanted kind of the skin to be just as bright as the hair.
Yeah.
We were talking about doing some kind of like avatar-esque kind of like patterning on the thing, but I think because of the amount of tonal variance on the skin, there's quite a lot of dark areas where there are some sort of softer shadows and stuff. We really wanted high impact on the right areas.
I'm intrigued to see that when it's on some of the other models though, because this model has got a lot of extra detailing on it. So when you see one of the more infantry models where you can see more of the skin, because there's not all this extra leather and stuff.
I'm looking forward to seeing it on like the crew tops and stuff like that.
They're going to look amazing in it.
We'll either do one of our showcase videos or put it in a roundup or something. Or if we don't, then we'll
put some photos up. They'll be on socials anyway, so we'll get them on Instagram and we'll get them on the Siege Instagram and on the other places as well. But
that's at Siege Studios if you're not following us already on Instagram.
Yeah,
come out over there. Should we talk about some of the other ones that the team done then?
Should we do
the green ones first?
Yeah. Should we group them all together?
Okay, well, first one we have is Paul, former guest of the show last week.
Not familiar with don't really remember. Yeah, he almost deserves this seat box. He finishes these every time.
Every single time we do one of these challenges, Paul show everyone up, because he'll come into the office with one just like done, just super nonchalant. Paul, like 2 days later,
Paul will start after everyone.
Yeah,
and go, go on in. I'll do it. I think I've got like a couple of afternoons, so yeah, I'll do it. And then he'll come in like 2 days later and be like, yeah, there you go, I've done that. And it's like the full model. And you're like, okay, brilliant. I've been staring at mine for a week, but okay.
Yeah, so it's on screen now for everyone. Done another green scheme.
Still, all jokes aside, I will say at least all the green ones, they are different enough.
It's quite
interesting to see that as well, actually, because everyone's kind of tackled the same colour scheme in different ways.
It's actually a good example of, how much variation you can get over. Because also, when you look at the box art, similar again to the Cruel Boys, they are kind of designed to have these different shades throughout a squad. So it does show how, even if you did want to stick to green, you can get these different hues.
Even in the unit, like the box art one, you've got so many different tones in that unit, just in the paint job. Like the Overmetal team have really thought about it. Like it's almost like, the way I looked at it, it was almost like imagine all the Kroot come from one planet. There's different regions of Kroot in like, so they're all mixed up. It's like I say,
it's similar to the Cruel Boys, because they do it similar with the Cruel Boys, where like they're certain even within a squad, or even orcs on a greater scale, they kind of do that. I think at least within the lore, they talk about orcs like that. I think often they do paint them the same, but it's a good example of how different you can get with wanting to do a green scheme.
It looks fantastic. I really like as well what he's done with like the hair spikes kind of thing, where it's sort of blends in almost
from green to yellow.
It's really cool. Okay, next up we had Rich from the team paint another green scheme. This one's a lot more vibrant, got this sort of almost like lizard,
I was gonna say
frog kind of man
it's got a chameleon vibe going on, and I absolutely love it. It's really, really ace.
I mean, I don't want to distract from the model too much, but the basing is really cool. With this sort of...
The basing is almost what James was alluding to, where he was like, the other option that they could have gone for on their one, where it was like, a bit of a Mars type thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Obviously, that goes quite well with the green. And having the kind of dust from the base going onto the feet is really cool.
I was literally just about to say that, exactly.
They're quite like good, they seem like quite good sculpts to do that sort of thing for, because there's like lots of bits in the feet for the dust to get like caught, if that makes
sense.
Yeah,
you're not going to be like running through the desert and not having anything getting between your toes.
I don't always like it when I see it on like Space Marines and stuff, because I'm like, well, it's just flat panels. It's going to just roll off. It might stain it a little bit, but...
Yeah. And also you think like, how did it get on the top of the foot? It doesn't make sense.
Kicking his feet as he's walking through.
It's really fantastic. A darker metal as well, I think, than everyone else has gone for.
I really like that. Yeah, I really like the fact that it's dark. It looks either aged or just really like dirty, and like, which is quite cool. I like the blue accent and the hair and the spines like growing out of the arms. Just that turquoise punch. It just looks really, really good.
It's interesting actually talking about that, because we were saying how the hair, whatever the hair is kind of, it's the similar thing to the spikes. I think we've all just instinctively done them all the same color.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone's broken those up.
No.
Between the difference between the hair and the spikes.
I don't think so. Yeah.
There's actually we're going to have a tutorial for this exact model going up on our Patreon as well. So if anyone likes that in particular, they can.
So patreon.com/siegestudios. There'll be a full PDF guide for this model and many others you can find. I think it's 300 plus tutorials we've got over there now.
Yeah.
This will be one of them.
And actually, Rich has done a lot of them. So if you like the look of that, you should see what he's done with some other stuff as well.
Yeah. Awesome. Okay. Eric from the team has painted two. So already twice as good as us.
This is another one like what we were saying with Paul, where it's like, I've just done this. I've got a couple of evenings or whatever. Eric, when we did the Tyranids, he did three.
Eric.
He done them so quick as well.
And with these. Loves an organic miniature, and these are like right up his
street. Let's do the darker one first. Yeah. So let's have a look at that. First of all, I mean, it wouldn't be me if I didn't pull him up on it straight away. Green base rim.
I'm gonna say how he's managed to make me
not hate it.
Not hate a green base rim. I don't know, but it looks fine. It looks perfect.
Do you know why? No. Do you know why? Because it incorporates with the basing scheme. You see that moss on there? See the grass on there?
It's not just that. It's also the fact that the model has also got green splashes on it. So you've got like the little, the thigh band thing that he's got, the sash across the chest as well.
Yeah, I mean, like, I have to admit it, but a black base rim would not work here.
No.
It wouldn't work. You could maybe do grey if you really wanted. But I think the fact that he's made the green base rim look appealing to me is a success in itself. But also... I was hoping someone was going to do a black skin. I think it looks really cool.
I love the sort of like tummy underside of the model, not the back, obviously having that white kind of like pattern in it, incorporates it on the head.
Yeah, but and even beyond that, because if you look at where the actual sculpted detail is, he's actually interpreted it further up the neck. That's not actually sculpted on the neck.
Even on the sides as well, he's kind of put this pattern into its own.
It's like blends in, doesn't it? It's not this like harsh line. It's like this sort of like...
He's like created a pattern
transition. Yeah, exactly. And he's done that on the head as well, which looks really cool.
I really love the striations on the hair as well. It sort of like looks like the black kind of tone is feathering down the hair as well to a white, which is quite cool.
And you've got these like sort of stripe sort of things going on as well, which sort of leans into the, I guess, the markings that you would have from like these different packs and whatnot.
The wood grain on the gun looks really good as well. Like, he's done a great job of just adding some subtle wood grain on there, which is really nice.
The one of the things that Eric does a lot, which he clearly, I think the reason he enjoys doing like a lot of the natural creature models, is he'll pull from like real insects and things like that, or real animals and things, which maybe not so much on this one, probably on the next one a little bit more, but he did that for the Tyranids as well. So I think that's
you
where
you say that, but like this to me immediately looks like some sort of like aquatic creature, like this kind of like shark, dolphin sort of thing with that like underside.
Yeah, I was gonna say
like a killer whale croup.
I was gonna say on here probably the pattern that we were just talking about is like the version of that. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. But it looks like something you would see in real life though, if you get
I'm sure there's like frogs that are like jet black and they've got white splotches like that. Or is it it's a combination of either.
It just
like,
looks right, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Okay.
On to the next one.
Best till last, in my opinion. Yeah. This is my favourite from the bunch.
This is
absolutely wild. Like this
literally.
This is really good. If someone did an army of these. Oh my god.
This caught me off guard because I hadn't seen, I didn't even know Eric was painting any. This just showed up on my desk just out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. And it completely took me aback. It is absolutely incredible. It's such a creative and unique approach to these models, which I've not seen anyone else doing like too many markings on these models in general, let alone like a tiger stripe like this. Like it's absolutely fantastic.
I love the way that it's not just on the like the more orangey parts, it does feather in onto the chest as well. I think that's probably one of my favorite bits.
That's such a subtle thing to potentially like gloss over as well, but the fact that that does come all the way across.
It's interesting that he's obviously on both of them. So on that with the stripes and then on the other one, as we were saying, by extending the pattern, he made an effort to tie those two surfaces in together.
Yeah.
And not just have a harsh line. I think that's really cool. And maybe not something that everyone would think about doing.
It's even the interesting choice of doing the lower jaw in a lighter color and the top of the beak being in that darker tone as well. Like it's just sectioning the details on the model by using that color to show like the patterning moving across the miniature, which I think is just great.
I think it looks so cool. I am praying that someone sees that and books in with us to copy that, because we get that sometimes when we do these things, like they'll use our images as references. They'll see it and be like, oh, I want that. And I'm praying someone books in some croup with that as a reference, I think.
Yeah. And brown base rim. So instantly a winner.
Yeah. He's done me there as well, because it looks good.
It does. It works. It works in the model really well.
Yeah. Awesome. As artists, we know how time consuming painting miniatures is, especially if you want to achieve a high standard for tabletop or display. Life is busy and we don't all have 8 hours a day to paint. Plus, if you're still early in your painting journey, it may feel that you're a long way off ever owning your own beautiful army for your games. For 10 years, Siege Studios has been delivering bespoke miniature painting commissions to collectors and gamers all over the world. We have a world-class team of artists from Golden Demon winners to ex-studio painters, collating hundreds of years of collective experience. Here at Siege, we offer a series of painting levels and services to meet your needs and budget, whether you want a favorite character for your display or a stunning gaming army. We pride ourselves on offering well above the industry standard of quality and our customer experience. To see our gallery, learn more about our services, and get a quote now, head over to siegestudios.co.uk or head to the link in this episode's description. So if you've been following the podcast for the past few months, you'll know that all of this year we have been doing a painting challenge for every single month. And in the month of March, it is March for McCrag. So we've asked everyone in the community to submit your entries, and thank you everyone so much who participated. Really, really fun to see all of these rolling in over the course of the month.
Yeah.
And we...
Sorry, just to clarify, we didn't come up with March for McCrag. We're not trying to take credit for that. There was two that we kept the same, March for McCrag and October. We felt where they were baked into the community. We didn't want to overtake them.
And just quickly, before we dive into this month's submissions, next month is April's Apocalypse. So the idea for that is to paint anything you want adding to your existing army. So yeah, it's just to buff up any force that you've got. If you want to share anything that you've done, please submit your entries on Instagram or on the Siege Studios Discord. But please remember to put the hashtags Paint Perspective Podcast and Apocalypse. Both of those are going to be on screen for you now. Before we get into these entries, what have we done for March from a Crag?
That is a question.
Yeah. You called something out of retirement, didn't you, Joe? Something.
Oh yeah, we can put that up on the.
Something came out of retirement, didn't
we? We can put that up. I did say to these two that I was going to submit this, which is I can't guarantee that it's the first model I ever painted as a child, but it's one of.
Say, Joe, the whole point of this challenge is that you paint something new rather than submitting something that you've already done.
He did. He retouched the base from a different colour.
So I was going to, I jokingly submitted this, but yeah, I didn't paint any. Obviously, as you all know, I was ill a little bit. I haven't been painting much. I don't paint much anyway at the moment. So didn't really get, you're lucky you got your 75% crew model done, to be honest. As I alluded to, I was tempted to put a helmet on the base and say,
yeah,
oh, March from a Crag. But yeah, didn't get to it this month. I'll work something out for next month. I don't have an army, so that might be, it's just a free month really, isn't it?
Yeah,
paint anything.
James,
done a base. Fallen Brother Palio, he was going to be the victim of the flesh shaper, but the flesh shaper is currently invisible. Is that stealthy?
Yeah, this is the reason that your crew thing wasn't done.
Yeah, I really want to do something really cool, put like a fallen enemy on the base for the flesh shaper, show he's just killed something. And I found this really cool bit of basing. I don't know what kit that fallen marine is from. So someone who knows.
It's the Apothecary, isn't it?
No, it's not. It's another model. I don't know.
I thought it was the Apothecary first, but it's not.
I don't actually know what it's from. So if anyone knows, and you can see it on screen now, but if anyone knows, then just let me know, because I actually want to know what kit that's from. But I just spent ages cutting it and like getting a crowbar to fit it onto a 32mm base. And then, yeah, just had a lot of fun.
Always a great tool for cutting, the crowbar.
The crowbar, yeah.
Staple.
Yeah.
Staple cutting tool.
Put that up there with the power tools for drilling your barrels.
James is sat there with his DeWalt drill and a crowbar to get it off the sprue.
Yeah.
It was an analogy, but never mind.
Not a good one.
So I had a lot of fun painting it. And just tried to marry the sort of the rock and all that stuff, obviously, what me and Ad discussed for the basin on the shape that Ad done. And then, yeah, just done an ultramarine. It's quite funny because I posted it and tagged the one true son of Gulliman, Mr. Nick Baton himself, who thoroughly enjoyed the fallen ultramarine on the base. But
nice one.
But yeah.
Okay, so for my one, unfortunately, I didn't have enough time to finish.
Here we go.
There's a lot of unfortunates this episode all the way through.
I will say, in terms of time investment, I think I'm like at the top of the chain for this.
Probably,
one.
Because, yeah.
As a little bit of a teaser, I've been working on a long overdue video project, which I cannot share the details of yet, but I will put a little whip on the screen, a little work in progress where it's at. But there will be a video for this marine coming soon. That's all I can say. It is in progress. It should be finished very soon, hopefully.
Yeah, but we'll give George a pass on that one.
Yeah, for a video, it obviously takes a lot longer, limited time. So that's where we're at. And I didn't want to work on it in my own time because then the video wouldn't have anything to go with it.
Yeah.
So there we are, sort of limited for that. All of the contributions from the community have been on the screen while we've been speaking. Are there any in particular notable mentions that we want to give a little shout out to?
Yeah, I really like, I'd not fully clued up on the Primaris tanks, but I think there's a repulsor. Is that a repulsor?
Yep.
I think it's the only tank that's been submitted. And I think I feel like I'm in the minority of someone who actually really enjoys the Space Marine tank designs, the Primaris ones and the repulsors and the gladiators and things like that.
You're on your own.
Well, I just said I'm in the minority. Yeah. I think they can look really cool, especially when they're all painted. And what I like about this one is it's mostly because I think there's so many guns on it that you get a lot of that red weapon casing.
Yeah, there's a lot of red on it.
I love on the tanks where, especially in the context of an army, if the tank has just a higher percentage of a spot color on it.
Yep.
So maybe some panels are done a different color and things like that, a little pattern or something.
It can be a bit of an attack of one color otherwise.
Yeah, I do like that on some of the tanks. So I think the amount of red on it, especially as it's like a Tech Marine hanging out the top as well, so that's some extra red. Yeah, I just really liked the kind of ratio of the extra spot color there, and some nice, presumably airbrush work on the shading on the panels and things like that.
Nice one. One I've picked, there is a red Gravis Captain in here, which I believe is like a successor chapter sort of situation. But I just really love the color scheme of this, like vibrant blue cloth work with the red armor, and the black detailing as well is kind of Blood Angels-esque. So that's a win for me. But
Genesis chapter.
Yeah, really sharply painted, very well executed overall. James?
So I really, really absolutely like this moment. I saw it when I was searching through, and it is from Chill Paints, and it is a new rendition of the Terminator or Brother Sergeant Valius from the very first second edition Terminator box set. So yeah, he's used the old sort of style banner on one of the new Dreadnought, one of the new Terminators that came from Leviathan, and done a green base rim on it. So I think that, yeah, I think that deserves a very, very big thumbs up.
Just as an additional shout out, there was a couple of retro submissions which took me by surprise, actually. There was like a whole retro force in there as well, yeah, from Old Hammer Nerd.
If they've painted those all in this month, then fair play, yeah. But still looks cool together. They're actual old models as well, aren't they?
They are, yeah.
Fit into his name, though, or yeah. their name.
We had absolutely tons of submissions for this month. So again, thank you everyone to the listeners who has participated. Really look forward to seeing what everyone has done in the month of April for Aprocalypse.
I think for Aprocalypse as well, I'm going to encourage, you don't have to, obviously we're saying add to your army, but I'm encouraging full army shots. I want to see shots of your whole army, even if you haven't painted everything in.
Well, yeah. I think that makes sense, obviously, that the name is obviously from Apocalypse, and that's about big, big armies and big forces. Yeah. So that would make perfect sense. You can either add to your army or start a new one. Yeah.
But if you have an army existing and you're adding a couple of units to it, or you're adding a character to it or something, I want to see the full army.
Nice. If you enjoy listening to these podcast episodes every single week, I'd like to ask that you could please do us one small, tiny favor in return and hit that subscribe button on YouTube or the follow button on your podcast app. It takes only 2 seconds and it really, really helps us out, and it allows us to bring you these episodes for free every single week. Thank you so much. Back to the episode. Question of the week time. Thank you everyone for submitting your questions for question of the week. If you have a question that you would like us to answer on a future episode of the podcast, please leave it in the comments down below on YouTube. Or if you are listening on any of the audio platforms, please fire us a DM on Instagram at Siege Studios. This question. So I actually had a bit of a joke last week where I said that Grimdark Mark was coming in with all of these questions found on the show. But a bit of a rebuttal from Painted by Jim, who says, "It's time to dethrone Grimdark Mark." That's right. It's Jim again, not Earthworm or Carey, with a question for the podcast. A question that's so out of left field that flat earthers would not be able to explain where it came from. So this, he says, what is your go-to meal for a painting session? Personally, I find this an area never covered, but the difference a solid meal makes to the ease at which I can apply edge highlights is quite extraordinary. Any thoughts on this?
I've never really thought about
it.
I've never really thought about it.
He's right. It is pretty far out of left field.
Yeah. I'm now thinking I can maybe blame a lot of my painting on an empty stomach, potentially, because I don't think I ever go. I'm definitely not bringing a snack to the painting table. No, by the way, I don't know where you're all sitting.
Like that trope of like the eating Doritos while you're playing video games. It's like, I'm not about that. I'm not getting like, yeah, you know.
So I don't know if that's where we're going with this, but I'm not about to bring like popcorn to the painting table.
I suppose some snacks do lend itself better to painting than others, because I will say that occasionally I'll have, like, because I like to have a coffee, so occasionally there'll be like a biscuit on standby. I might be like, if I'm feeling crazy, like from leftover like from the
painty,
weekend.
Yeah, painty fingers and stuff, and then you're picking up your biscuit.
Crumbs in your palate. Like,
I'm pretty deliberate about keeping it away from the painting zone. I almost like hold my biscuit away from my desk.
Yeah, yeah. But, depends.
If you're a dipper, then it's not so bad, because it just, you know.
Yeah, biscuit, it's you know, a bit.
It does,
yeah,
depend on the biscuit, really, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. Let's not go down that rabbit hole, because
there's a whole conversation that we're not ready for, I think.
Love a jammy dodger.
Yeah, I think I'm just going to say, just sink some pre-workout before. That's probably my go-to. I'll just sink some pre-workout.
Yeah.
And then you're in for an all-night painting session.
Yeah.
Pretty. You might get the shakes, actually. So probably not good for HI lighting, actually. Yeah, just a banana. Banana and pre-workout.
Being honest, most of my painting comes in the evening and it's post-dinner. Normally, like, pretty much straight after. So,
you are full. You've had your.
Occasionally.
What's an average George dinner?
My friends are going to be laughing if they listen to this because this has become a bit of a meme.
Oh, what, within your group?
Oh, yeah, with like the sort of meals that I make. I get, when it's just me, like on a weekday and I'm home from work and I'm feeling lazy, like, there are some very rogue, like, slapped together, unhinged meals, which I'm not going to get into. I'm not going to shame myself.
Full teenage boy dinner.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But regardless of that, one thing that I'll occasionally, sometimes I will have like a packet of sweets or something while I paint, like, you know, little snack, little sugar hit.
Yeah, not for me. I can't be doing it. What about you, James? Are you?
So if I'm going to have a meal before painting, I always think painting when you're not hungry is good, just for maintaining control and that kind of stuff. So I'd probably say, I was to choose something.
I often lose control when I'm hungry.
Yeah.
That is fair.
Do you find that's how you lose your brush protectors.
Yeah, that is fair. Yeah, I eat them.
Do you find that, like, any sort of hobby rage you have, that's going to be pent up from the hangriness?
Yeah,
like,
probably.
You know, you're getting frustrated with it's not going
well. Yeah, I'm learning a lot about myself here, to be honest. Yeah.
No, I'm going to go for a tofu stir fry with peanuts and vegetables. That's what I'm going to go for.
Yeah, nice. Yeah.
Classic. What before? I'm assuming
before. Yeah. What do you think? I mean, stir frying while I'm while
trying. Does he use his brushes like chopsticks? Just turn the brush around.
All about efficiency. Yeah. It's like, yeah.
Okay. Fair enough. Yeah. Thank you. Painted by Jim. Hobby hacks. This is our little closing tradition for the podcast, where we share a little quick tip or a hobby hack, if you will, with you. I've been getting a lot of flack for my hobby hacks, so I've been putting my thinking cap on. I've got a useful one for once, which is more than James can normally say, to be fair. Mm-hmm. And Joe, you kind of
I don't think I've ever submitted one.
No.
I just like to sort of sit here.
No, you've definitely done one. I can't remember what it was. You've definitely done one. I feel like you've definitely done one.
I actually genuinely don't think I've ever put one forward. I just like to sit here and nod and then like
and then whinge about the quality of them.
Yeah. So I think you should come up with all of the hacks for April.
Leave it out.
That's what
leave
I think.
Leave it out.
Hacks like nothing. Drink pre-workout before you paint.
Yeah.
Sort of solid.
All right. Yeah. If you really want me to, I will.
Yeah.
I think there should be a challenge for it. I think you should come up with
that's a disservice to our listeners because they're just going to get absolutely terrible tips.
What, bit judgmental. Bit judgmental.
Four or five for April.
Well. Yeah?
There you go. I'll do every hobby hack in April.
There we go.
Well, Joe, I think you're going to like this week's hobby hack. So you've turned me onto the light that is the magnifying headset for painting your models.
I have an interesting update on this, by the way, but carry on.
No, okay, go on. Do you want to go into that first?
So previous on the podcast, I've bragged about my perfect eyesight. turns out, actually, if you don't have glasses and you are finding a benefit from using the magnifiers, you might need glasses.
So you will see Joe now permanently wearing the magnifiers while walking around.
Basically, I have reading glasses now just for like use at work on screens and stuff. But it was mentioned that I also might find it benefit to paint my toy soldiers, which was an awkward interaction in the thing. And I tried it while painting the other day and I was like, this is like the magnifiers, but better.
Yeah, because they're made for your eyes and you can see properly.
Yeah, so it's like...
Wild.
It's actually, yeah, so you that I might have been a bit off track.
There's Joe's first hobby hack.
Yeah, fair enough.
There you go.
Oh, I should have saved it. Yeah, get glasses. Hobby hack one, get glasses.
Get an eye test.
Yeah.
I actually don't benefit from that because I wear glasses, but I wear them for long distance. Yeah, so I have to do the magnifying headset helps me, but not because my eyes don't work, just for the...
Yeah, mine's more that I couldn't focus as much on things that are like right in front of me.
Sure.
So,
yeah. Mine is just so that I don't have to sit here and have a head like this far away from my face, I guess. But regardless of that, if you happen to have a magnifying headset, which we've come to learn that quite a lot of people do, I'm quite an aficionado of taking photos of models. It's something that I've done a lot of. People often struggle with taking like little work in progress shots, like at their hobby desk. and a little hack that I've come up with for you. If you have, especially if you've got like a phone and you're struggling, like you can't zoom in on like the details, or you find you have to crop your photos, a lot of the magnifying headsets have like removable lenses because they're often interchangeable. If you grab one of those and you just slap it in front of your camera lens, you'll find that, oh, hey presto, it's like having a zoom lens for your camera. Zooms you right in.
That's pretty good.
I was thinking, as you were explaining it, I was thinking that can't be what it's going to be. I was like, that can't be it. He's going to say something else. Does that actually work?
It actually works. I can confirm it works. So this was an idea that I had, and I thought, oh, there's no way that's going to work, though, surely. Yeah, totally works.
Wild. Do you know what that reminds me of? Really quick tangent of a story. Before, when I was a teenager, was sort of pre-iPhone. It was just kind of coming into iPhones, but not everyone had one. So a few of my friends all had like digital cameras and stuff that we would take around, just like gigs and things like that. And one of my friends got a fisheye camera that was like, but it was a film camera.
Yep.
So the viewfinder was a fisheye thing. Mm-hmm. And we used to take his viewfinder and sellotape it to the front of our camera and take a picture on our digital camera through the fisheye viewfinder. And it actually
That's
used
not
to
as
work.
Silly as you think, though, because I don't know if you remember, before phones started having like multiple cameras and all the zooms and stuff in them, do you remember you used to get those little accessories?
That you like could like clip on the corner. Yeah.
The little clip-on lens.
Similar thing to that. And it actually used to work. So yeah, fair enough.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool little hack.
I've redeemed it, I think.
Yeah.
I'll take that as a W.
Yeah.
Yeah, nice.
Fair.
Yeah. Nice. Well, the real hack is get glasses.
Yeah. Obviously. Yeah, the true winner of the podcast. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, thank you everyone for listening to this week's episode of Paint Perspective. If you could please check out all of the links in the description of this episode to our website where you can get a quote from us for a commission. Also check out our Patreon for some awesome tutorials. Thank you everyone for listening to this episode. We will catch you next week.